Yeah, one of the early descriptions of the music on this album is a mix between Mike Oldfield's tubular bells and a part of David Bowie's low. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think any pop record that has a large sort of instrumental component to it, where you've got acres and acres of instrumental, might make people think of a Mike Oldfield record or something like that. But I suppose if I had a model for what I was doing in 1997 or 98, it would be that idea of the Bowie idea of low, where you have short pieces and you have instrumental pieces. And in fact, just before, in the first few months of 1999, I wrote some songs and short instrumentals and thought that it wasn't radical enough. So I pushed them aside and thought, megahertz, that's the idea. The long, slow instrumental the long, slow piece of orchestral music with a voiceover. So it was, in a way, it sort of sprung out of thinking about how you could split a record up into the songs and the instrumentals. And I just decided that if you're really thinking like that, you should go right ahead and be more radical in how you do it. But I'm a huge fan of Bowie's, and there's a certain period in the 70s where everything he did was of interest to me, absolutely everything.
Mm. It takes a lot of... It's not like really the kind of piece of music that you just have in the background while you're doing the dishes or friends for dinner or something like that.
No, it's not.
And it goes against the whole trend of just consuming.
Yes, it does. Yeah, that's an interesting point, because one of my favorite ideas about music is the world that you can enter into that's a world in its own. And it's an idea that applies to books and sometimes applies to, I'd say, certain films as well, where you might not want to visit that place all the time, but when you're in it, you don't really want to be distracted from it. Whereas I would say that most pop music works on the level of, first of all, it is something you can put on and enjoy while you're doing something else. If you put a track on when you're driving along, you can enjoy it and you don't have to pay too much attention to it. You'll get a thrill from it. But I'm not entirely sure that what I've been working on here with megahertz fits in that bracket. I think you do have to give it your attention. So it's both an advantage for the piece and a problem, because if you don't have the time for it, it doesn't make a lot of sense. But I would hope if someone actually put it on and sat with it, it can become quite compulsive, because it's a separate world. Mm. That's how I see it.
Your whole life, the latest 5-6 years, have changed so dramatically. With your eyes.
Yes.
Starting up a family and changing or going in a new musical direction.
Yes.
And you're too old for that.
I mean, that's right.
Shouldn't you be?
I hit 40 and everything changed, really. I got married and I had children and then I started to go blind. So it was quite a sudden barrier, just bang. I don't really know what to say about it. You just get on with it. I think that certain things are in the music that I'm not, I would like to be more of a light-hearted person, and I would like to do things that would just had a bit more of a smile in them. But even the things that I do that are, I'm 49, one of the small tracks on this. When I look at it now, I think, oh, it's a song about it's a song about a middle-aged crisis. Yeah. It's hardly teeny bopper music.
It's over and over and again.
That's right.
And that's
over
what I say in
and
a song.
Over again. That's right. But you're trying to. I still find that humorous. It's like dark humor that someone is having this terrible, terrible time, and all you can really do about it is admit that that's where you are, that you're middle-aged and these things have happened to you, and it would make you smile. But sometimes it bothers me that those are my preoccupations in song. when it should be. It should be something lighter and funny. It's not. It's not Hot Dog, Jump and Frog anymore. Oh God! But still a novelty record, though. That's probably the thing that's in common with it. It's still a novelty record.
Mm.
Just a grim one.
Mm. I'm 49.
Oh dear.
Was it after the? Because you did a small tour.
Yes. In 2000.
In year 2000.
Yeah.
And was it after that tour that you felt that now I have been doing these songs for such a long time that you felt that you had a possibility to move on?
Well, before I did the tour, I'd been working on Megahertz. That's the truth. And I think we did the tour because my idea was that I'd spent so long assembling the music to Megahertz, that whole of that 99 or whatever it is, with a computer. I mean, the irony of this is I started to do Megahertz because I couldn't use a computer. When my eyes got better, I assembled the whole thing and spent more time in front of a computer. I actually went the other way, and in the end, I used the computer a lot, and I got so sick of it. When I finished Megahertz, I thought, it's time to do the old thing with guitars. That's what made me think it would be a good idea to do the tour. Mm. So I went straight from finishing the sort of demos for Megahertz into doing the rehearsals for the tour in the early months of 2000. And it seemed like, I'll be honest with you, when I got out there and played for people, there is a problem in that if you become a jukebox, don't you? You do become a jukebox for whoever the artist is or whoever the singer is. If people want to see you, they probably want to see you for the things that they like about you. And I think that's fair, you know, you've got to play your greatest hits. But it's never about new music. A live tour is never really about what's on your mind, whereas a record can be that. So that's why, again, since the tour, I've sort of pushed aside thoughts of playing live, because to me it's just recreating the past. It's a big nostalgia thing, and I don't love that as much as new things. So having finished the tour, I immediately went back to my way of thinking, okay, well, try and make different records. But life's never smooth, and we got into The Gunman and Other Stories before we got around to Megahertz for various reasons. It seemed like a more obvious thing to do, and also it disturbed me to have songs that I'd written for other people. And even though I liked what people did, I liked what Jimmy Nail and Cher did with them, in my head I always had my own version of these things, so I felt we should do that first, you know. So The Gunman and Other Stories was sort of tidying up the back catalogue, and then we've moved on with A Troll and Megahertz.
Mm. How do you look back on earlier Creep of Sprout recordings now? Are you still like tired, or feel like I don't really.
You know, it's funny because, you know, we were talking about how, you know, treacherous your memories can be, and how unreliable they are. I think it's really. I don't have a very clear picture of them. That's the honest answer to that. The records are always confused in my mind with the song as it was on a piece of paper when I was writing it, and so in my head I'm still hearing what I wrote, whereas everyone else has heard what's on the record, and that may be the only thing they have of that, or their memories attached to it. So I'm never quite sure how close I got to what I wanted, or if it's too far away from what I wanted, or whether the record we made was better than the original idea, as I'm sure it sometimes was, you know. But I don't think a lot about it, to be honest. I don't spend a lot of time thinking about the old ones.
So you don't go back and think like, well, maybe Thomas did take too much place on with producing Steve McQueen.
Oh, right. Yes, of course. I know I will hear things. I will have mixed feelings about things. Usually, it's usually more basic than that. I'll think that my writing style is too fussy, or I sound too prissy, or I sound... I know why some of those records sound the way they did, because I wanted them to be more complex than live recordings. But yes, sometimes I'll think, well, what was wrong with the demo? What was wrong with the live recording? You know, and then you get into a cycle of, oh, well, so have you... could you have had a completely different sound, you know, over all this time? Could you have made a different kind of record? And I sometimes think, well, yeah, probably could have done. You know, we could have gone more in a direction that we had when we first started, like Lines in My Own Garden, where it would have been much rougher. And, you know, but I didn't want to do that at the time. So I can take the whole thing to bits. You know, I can really pull it all to bits if I get started on it. Usually, you know, things like, you know, Thomas's contributions, I'm so grateful that he tidied things up on Steve McQueen. He sort of, he pulled them into a good song structures, you know. But yeah, you know, I'm sure that even he would say, yes, sometimes it was too tidy, or it was too polished, or I spent too long on details. But I remember Thomas really loving, the things that he really loved were a song called Knock on Wood from Langley Park of Memphis, and Jesse James Bolero on Jordan. Those were his... I remember him spending months on them. But no one ever mentions those songs, ever. No, well, occasionally Jesse James Bolero, someone would say something to me. No one I don't think I've ever met has mentioned Knock on Wood. But Tom, I know, really loved that. And I think he would probably be amused, you know, to think, God, I spent all that time in front of a Fairlight and a sequencer doing these effects, and people think, oh, well, actually, I like Cars and Girls, you know.
Talking about Jesse James,
yes,
the absolute stardom, like you have been writing songs about Bruce Springsteen, Princess Diana.
Yes.
Does it still? Do you still
the find star thing?
The star thing.
I'm not as interested as I was because I feel like it's a fingerprint now. Oh, that's what he does, you know, songs about people. So I've backed off that. I felt it was too much like I was being in a box, but. I noticed that there was an opera written about Princess Diana, and I had thought about that at one time. Yep, I thought about that. I thought, yeah, but someone's done it. No, I mean, I'm trying to think if I have any other songs about characters, about people, since we last met. I back away from it.
We Let the Stars Go is about going to a Michael Jackson concert in Leeds, but you have all...
No.
I've heard, so...
I wrote that the day of a Michael Jackson concert in Leeds.
Ah.
I was going to go see Michael Jackson play in Leeds, and I started to write the song.
Yeah.
And didn't go, and I gave the tickets away, because I really like writing the song. That's true.
but Behind the Veil, or...
Oh, yes. I've written songs about Michael Jackson. Yeah. In April of 1991. Yeah. That's when I did my Michael Jackson songs. Yeah. I had a real sort of surge of interest. And they came very quickly. A whole lot of songs in the style of Thriller, I think it was. Yeah. Or Bad, or something like that. Sequenced things and... Oh, some of them are, but to be honest with you, some of them have like been, superseded by events. They've been outrun by history, the things that happened in them.
At the time.
Yeah, things that have happened since. They've been a weird, I'll tell you, I mean, this is sort of, it's macabre and it's sort of dark. But one of the songs that I wrote was a song about that he was Princess Diana's bodyguard. He was singing as if he was Princess Diana's bodyguard. And I had a song, it was called... oh, Lord, what the hell is its title? I can't remember. I can't even remember the title. It's quite a slick number. Mm-hmm. But I had... there were too many things that seemed to have come true since then. You know, one was called After the Crash, about a dreadful car crash, and the idea was songs that he could obviously never really do, but there might be sort of somewhere lurking in his head themes that might be in him. But I think his own story's got so dark now that sort of it's made mine seem old-fashioned, you know. I don't know if I'll ever do anything with them. I couldn't imagine a way I could use them. You know, I don't know how I would use these songs or what. Someone would have to write a little, have to be like a little film or, you know, about a character like Michael Jackson, and they could maybe use the songs. But as happens with lots of stuff that I write, I'll do it, I'll write it because I've got the idea for it, and then I'll move it, I'll push it aside, and I'll do something that's more useful, you know, something that will perhaps have a better chance in the marketplace.
Looking back on the way of being so fascinated with these people, which their lives are transferred to something, to fiction, and I'm not talking only about the Osbournes. What do you think? What made you so fascinated with?
I wish I had a good considered answer for that. I don't know why. I'll tell you one reason why. One of your first problems if you write a song is getting people interested in it, or getting people to understand what it is that you are singing about. So obviously if you sing a love song, that's something that most people can they can understand. Similarly, if you sing about someone that they also have opinions about, that's another way of doing it. And I think my songs that were about other people were generally about people who were world famous. So immediately you've got through to the listener, because, you know, as soon as someone thinks, okay, Bruce, he's singing about Bruce, okay, right, I know something about that person. That's probably been a little more obscure on the Elvis ones, because I don't think I actually mentioned his name anywhere. But, you know, as soon as you do an interview or you tell people that that's what it's about, then they have a way into the song. So it might be that, it might be something as simple as finding subjects that people would be already interested in. And actually, it's an easy thing to do, you know, to write a song about someone that, you know, we'll all have an opinion about, you know, I don't know, it could be Bill Clinton or something like that, where everyone thinks they know something about him, you know, or maybe they think they know far too much about him or what have you. In which case, you know, as a songwriter, you can get very quickly to the heart of things.
Have you ever felt it yourself in your own life, as a way of investigating things that happen to yourself, that your own life, what is reality, what
is
fiction?
Yes. Well, the thing about writing a song is that you're automatically saying something about yourself anyway, even in your choice of subjects. I mean, you know, you could conclude that I didn't like to talk about myself if I wrote songs about other people, or you might say, well, actually, you're writing about your own fantasies, or you're writing about some part of your personality that's attracted to that. You can read it two ways. So I think any act of writing is autobiographical. You know, I don't think you can escape that. Even if you think you're distancing yourself from it, you are definitely writing about yourself. But I mean, I like that as well, because you don't even have to address it. You don't have to address everything in the song directly to yourself. But if you've thought of it, if you've imagined it, then it is telling you something about the writer.
Guess this world needs its dreamers.
Yes.
May they never wake up. Well, I have to ask you, Paddy, about all these like projects of yours, which actually I trawled the megahertz was one of them. Which actually turned up as you had
that's
to,
there you
to,
go.
To,
yeah,
to give, a, yeah. give a comment on each one of them.
Right.
Total Snow, a Christmas album.
I knew you were going to ask that one. I just guessed that. Total Snow. Christmas album.
Yeah.
I think it's got a basic problem, my Christmas album, which is that it's too sort of too grown up for Christmas. You can't have songs that are sort of... that may, you know, doubt certain truths about the Christmas story, or you can't have religious doubt in a Christmas.
You have to
song.
Still believe in Santa.
Yes, you have to still believe in Santa, and I'm not sure that my music these days believes in Santa. Yeah. That's the trouble. But some of them, you know, I do have a few from 1985, which are The Madman on the Roof is one of them about Santa Claus. Which actually works like an old-fashioned Christmas song, because it's got that lightness of spirit and it's got the sleigh bells. One or two of the others were just too solemn for Christmas, and you can't have that. But I think I might go back to that one day, you know, and do maybe a few instrumentals on it. I was thinking the other day, a good title would be, Has He Been Yet? Because that's what kids always say, Has He Been Yet? And it would just have to be an instrumental, you wouldn't need any words at all. And you'd give that complete atmosphere of a child's excitement on Christmas morning. But I think in America they're bigger on Christmas records than certainly in Britain. I don't know how it is in Sweden. Is there a market for them, for a Christmas record?
Oh, definitely.
There is, yeah?
Yeah, definitely. But I think there is also a market for the one who is not only for the Destiny's Child There should be an alternative Christmas record. Definitely. Because
there should be.
People are so puzzled, so they play all kinds of shit.
No, that's
during Christmas, that's because right. you're trapped.
No, you're trapped, that's right. That was my original idea, to have an alternative Christmas record. Then I thought, look, you know, who are you kidding? Who's going to play at this if it's, you know? And also, you're going to put it on front of kids. You don't want them to be saying, so, you know, so that's not quite right, is it not? And this business about the stable, you're not sure about the stable either. You know, I thought there's too much doubt in it, which seemed to me, 15 years ago, that was the whole point of the exercise, and that's a great idea. Now, I don't know. I'm not sure.
I thought he lived in Finland. No. Okay, yes. Another one of those circulating. Sorrow the Fox.
I've scrapped that. I mean, I've kept a few pieces of music from it.
Swans.
Swans was one of the tunes from it. I got this idea that I could actually write something that wouldn't need to be played live. That was what I thought. I thought I'd do something that you don't have to play live, and you could get it done into a film, which is still, you know, I still think like that sometimes. If you don't want to do a visual representation of yourself, write some music that, you know, works in a different thing with a cartoon or pictures of some other kind. And Zorro was that idea, but really, if I'm honest about it, I wrote some good songs, but most of them tended to be the same song. They tended to be the opening song of the piece. Right? I just didn't have the story. I mean, I'd read stories about Zorro, and then I would slowly, over a period of time, see that there was going to be a film about him. There is a musical about Zorro. Someone did one a few years ago. I've never seen it or heard any of it, but I read in a paper someone was doing a musical about Zorro. So I just thought, no, you've written the same song too many times. But the music is quite good. Some of the music is quite good, but I haven't used it other than Swans. So I've scrapped that.
Earth, the story so far.
Earth, the story so far. That's one of my. That's one of the pieces that troubles me most, because it's all written. I just didn't have the energy to record it. I felt as if.
Have you made it too big?
No, it probably was a little bit big, but I don't know if it was. I actually don't know if it was longer than an hour and say 15 minutes. I don't know if it was like a full double CD thing, and I would certainly chop it down to a good size. And in fact, recently I transferred all the discs that with all the information on from my studio to my house, and they're on this big box. And I thought, I'm going to sort all through all of these and have a look at them and try and do something. But sometimes you just. There are two sides to this, like the words to the megahertz are two ways of looking at this. One is that you write things that you really want to write. And then the second part is anyone else going to be really interested in them? And will you get money to do them? And will it take too long to do, or will it be too expensive? So there's the writing bit, and then there's the reality bit. And Earth's story so far, the writing bit went very well, and I'm pleased I did it. But the second bit, I feel it's a bit of a sort of project that you might think, well, it could cost some money, or even if it didn't cost a lot of money, how exactly are you going to set it up to sell it? Should it have some sort of a series of videos with it? It all started to get a little bit complicated. Is it going to be orchestral, or is it going to be a group? And the music on it is sort of probably midway between a group and megahertz. It's that sort of, it's somewhere in between the two. And in the end, when you've puzzled over some of these factors, you choose the easier option to do something else. So I've done the important bit, I've written it, but I'm not quite sure what to do with it or when to do it. Mm. But I spent a long time on it. Mm. And I hope to do them. But each year you write more bits and pieces, and usually the thing you've just finished is really what you want to do. So Megahertz is now. Megahertz is, will be 10 years old. Not Megahertz. All Earth the Story so far,
yeah,
will be 9 to 10 years old. Mm. You know, in the summer. It'll be 10 years since I started it. So it sat there for a long time. Sometimes you look at, you know, sometimes I just look to get in a position of power to do things as well. So that if Megahertz did well, or if people said, well, that's a departure for you, and, you know, yes, have you ever thought of doing something with pictures? Then I might say, well, Earth the Story so far would work in a similar way, where you could make a small film for it, or get someone who is an animator. But as a straightforward prefab sprout record, it might not work, you know.
Okay. One called Billy Midnight.
Billy Midnight, yeah.
Or Knights in Armor, I've heard.
They're all the same. They're all the same collection of songs. Knights in Armor, and Billy Midnight. They were all romantic songs. Some of them I wrote, and I thought I would send to Rod Stewart, and then I changed my mind. I just felt like it was not quite. You might like them, but I don't think you would do them. Mm. Knights in Armor. That was in 1990, 91 or something. Have you got Neon Opera down as well on your list? Do you have that Neon Opera?
Neon Opera, no. Thank you.
That's another one.
Atomic Hymn Book.
The Atomic Hymn Book, that was written 1996, 97.
Gospel influenced.
Sort of gospel-y, sort of. Mm-hmm. Religious music that wasn't religious music, if you know what I mean. Again, it's like the Christmas thing, the doubting music, agnostic music or something. Yes, sort of gospel music that wasn't entirely sure of the religious basis of religious way of looking at the world. But I wrote that quite quickly, and I pushed it aside so we could record Andromeda Heights. And I've not really looked at it since. I just left it there thinking, well, one day that would make a good project. Or maybe with other singers and things. Sometimes I will envisage them not just being me singing them. So that, yeah, that's in the cupboard somewhere.
There is a very, well, in many of your songs, but in One of a Broken and the Do Up,
yes,
in Harlem, there is such a spiritual...
Yes. Well, I think that it's something that connects with people one way or the other. Whether, you know, I mean, you know, even if you're not particularly religious, you must sometimes look up at the sky and think, is there anything else, or how did we get here? It's always struck me as being one of the basic things that anybody does. Mm. And again, like writing about famous people, if you want to write about the religious impulse, it's something that's central to a lot of people in different countries. As we all know, it's different extremes as well, where, you know, it's such a passionate source of debate. Mm-hmm. And I do find that fascinating. More and more I would write things from a skeptical point of view, because more and more I think of all the trouble that religion has brought. Religion as opposed to actually whether there is a God or not, but religion as an institution, or as a what people do with the notion of spirituality when they turn it into institutions. That troubles me more and more, as I think it probably does a lot of people. But I like to write on both sides of the fence. I like to write someone who believes in God, and I like to write as someone who says, this can't be. I think it's the writer's job to explore both sides of that. Because if you just take the tack of being content in your faith or something, I don't think that leaves very much room for anyone else. It's like you're preaching at them. And I don't think that, you know, I think it's more interesting if you leave it open. So I will wear different hats in different songs.
Mm-hmm.
I try not to do it so much now, just because it's a subject I've done a lot. Mm. You know, if I see God creeping into the words, as he often does, I think, oh, there you go again. It's the third verse and God appears. That happens in lots of my songs. It's true. They do, you know. You've started with the specific or the personal, and then you've moved on. By the time you've got the third verse, you've got this, the camera's zoomed right back, and it's like God's looking down on the world. And it's okay once or twice, but I've done it too many times.
A new Prefab Sprout album.
Yes, that's the idea.
I heard it's already this year.
Well, we should be making it this year sometime. Yeah, it's true. We're supposed to. But I'm not sure what it'll be yet. Mm. Again, it's, you know, which one of these options do you want to do, and what would be easiest? And what would be a contrast to what you've, you know, what I've just done? Do you want to do a more orchestral thing or something that's very simple?
Mm. So you don't have an idea already?
I have several ideas, but I'm not entirely sure which one to go with. I had got it into my head just to do something with guitars, you know, very, 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 not simple, but just enjoying the sound of guitars in a way that I haven't done for a long time. Really, really make them the foreground, not just bass, drums and guitar, but make a guitar actually there with a voice or something, you know.
Roddy Frame's surf?
I haven't, you know, he's someone whose songwriting I like, but I don't buy many records, and I haven't followed him. Is it good?
It's really good, back to basics, recorded in bedroom.
Right.
So it's...
No, and what I'm talking about really is sort of, it's a different thing again. It's not the sort of one man and his guitar with a microphone in front of it. It's more like the guitar becomes the orchestra. It becomes really present. And you sort of have a lot of guitars as opposed to the one chap strumming it. But I don't quite know how to do that or how many of the songs would really justify being done like that, because sometimes you'll talk about a record before you've made it, and you'll realize that only two or three of the songs should be done in that style, and then it gets boring, and you should move on to other things. I'm really not certain what to do. Mm. And especially with having just finished Megahertz last year, I've not demoed everything in the way that I normally would. Normally, the demo process is quite elaborate, and it's a real blueprint for the record, whereas this time I just have sketches of things. So I'm not sure.
So we're not 100% sure about
that. No, I'm not. I'm not really.
Is it still, or it turned into more and more like a one-man band?
Well, it seems that way, doesn't it? I suppose it's in a sense it is like that. If you write the song and you sing it, that's inevitably the way that it goes. And it didn't start out like that at all. I thought it would be much more open, but part of the problem is, as a writer, I've got more and more interested in all the layers of the record. Mm. So when we first started out, I was quite happy to leave the rhythm thing to other people altogether. Or my brother would come in and he'd jam with me and he would do a bass line to something, and that would evolve over a period of months or years, and you'd get the finished form of something. But I felt like it was letting, you know, the responsibility for the writing go if I didn't take an interest in what the bass part was doing or the drums. That was my main thing, that, you know, if you were a serious writer of music, you'd have your ear on all of those parts. You wouldn't just be listening to the top line. But, you know, I'll still record with my brother Martin. I might even, you know, I mean, Neil played on our tour 2 years ago. Hmm. You know, so there's always a nucleus of people to call on. But Wendy's retired now, really.
Mm. What happened to Wendy? She had a baby?
Well, Wendy, I mean, you know, you think of the time that we spend between records. My brother has a job as a teacher. Mm. And Wendy got similar work. She was doing teaching and music-related things. And before you know it, you're spending more time doing other things than being in Prefab Sprout. And she had a baby, and things just, you know, the whole operation changes shape. And I think it's, you know, it is an entirely natural thing. You know, most groups, the starters are ganged, aren't they? And then something goes wrong with it. And I think that's the sort of the tale for everybody. But with us, you know, I've always thought that the things that I was working on or I was writing on would have a life outside of the normal cycle of a band where, you know, you have a few years and people buy you then and then they don't buy you. I'd always told myself that even if you don't sell as many records, if you're so into what you're doing, you'll still carry on, you'll find ways of doing it. So for me, the problem is, having gone through that phase where you're a novelty or you're new and you're young and you've gone through all of that, you then have to find subjects that still appeal to you as you're in middle age, but will still reach out to other people. And that is hard. But, you know, I feel like Megahertz is, it's almost like, part of it's like a blues record because it's very real. It's not frothy and it's not distracting and it's not light. It's something that sort of that comes from the heart, you know. But maybe it may be closer to sort of it has to be closer to like a middle-aged vision, because that's what I am now.